So for the past almost 2 days, we've been looking at performance and concurrentness implications of concurrency. Actually, for this talk, I'd like you guys to look at the security implications of concurrency. In particular, I'm going to talk about concurrency attacks, attacks that exploit concurrency errors involving parallel executions. And this is joint work with my brilliant colleagues, Antui, Sostoffel, and Simha. So I think folks in this room all agree that concurrent programs such as multi-threaded programs, you know, MPI programs, these programs are getting more and more critical and pervasive because developers write these programs to use the cores. And also we're creating lots of computations aggregated on these servers in the cloud. And for performance, virtually all servers use concurrent programs. At the same time, these programs are known to be difficult to get right. And you know, they're often plagued with many different concurrency errors, such as you know, race conditions, deadlocks, atomicity violations. So for bugs in sequential programs, we all know that these bugs can lead to various security attacks, such as SQL injection attacks, cross-site scripting attacks, or you know, other types of attacks, such as code injection attacks, right? And for concurrency errors, we believe that these errors will also lead to what we call concurrency attacks. So before I actually continue my talk, I'd like to do an audience poll. So how many of you have ever heard of attack caused by or exploiting a concurrency error? One guy. Okay. So a few of us knew this, but most of us actually are not aware of concurrency attacks. I'm sure like for these guys, you probably have a lot of questions about these attacks, right? So when we started looking at this topic, we had a lot of questions as well, such as, are these concurrency attacks real, right? If they're not real, if they do not occur in the wild or not practicable by the attackers, then we do not need to worry about concurrency attacks. And also, we want to know the factors that may affect the exploitability of concurrency errors, because attackers will surely exploit these factors to increase their success chance. And for defenders, we actually want to also use these factors to guide our defense techniques. For example, you know, for concurrency error detection, maybe we want to detect errors that are more exploitable. And lastly, you know, we talked about all these sequential attacks, SQL injection, you know, cross-site scripting, code injection. And these attacks are great, but many of these attacks were created in this sequential context. Now that we have concurrency, do these existing defense techniques still work? If they're broken, we actually need to fix them. So let's look at this first question, are they real? So we actually first looked at a bunch of research papers and also existing concurrency error benchmarks. Supposedly, these errors should be the you know, most serious errors, right? Because researchers have investigated a lot of research efforts on these errors. And turns out, these bugs are really hard to exploit. So first, for some of these bugs, in order to make them show up, we have to manually inject sleep statements, right, inside critical sections. So if you just run the program and modify it, the bugs never show up, right, for some of these bugs. And second, the effects of these bugs tend to be sort of harmless. You run it a few times, it turns out a corrupted log message, not that serious. And some bugs may cause crashes, but still not you know, that kind of security attack we want. We then turned our attention to the Common Vulnerability Enumeration Database and bug databases of popular open source software such as the Linux kernel and the GNU libc. We actually did find 36 exploitable concurrency errors. And you know, we actually spent quite some time understanding the logic of these bugs, how we can launch attacks. In some cases, we actually reproduce some of these bugs. And all the raw data plus our categorization and sometimes links to the exploits are shared on this link. So if you guys are curious, go ahead and download. So let me show you some real examples of concurrency errors that are exploitable so that you know, you believe me that concurrency attacks are real. So this first example is in the Moonlight runtime. The Moonlight runtime essentially is the open source version of the Microsoft Silverlight browser plugin. And this Moonlight runtime allows users to run .NET code inside open source browsers such as Firefox. And to speed up array copying, this Moonlight runtime uses this fast copy method, which first does a tab check on each pair of source and destination elements to make sure that the types match, right? There's a tab check there. And then it's going to, if the type matches, this fast copy method will do map copy from the source element to the destination element instead of running slower .NET instructions, right? So this is the optimization if the types match. So this code looks, you know, perfectly fine in a sequential setting, no bugs here. Unfortunately, attackers actually can create multiple threads and exploit issues in this piece of code to launch attacks, which can bypass the type system of the Moonlight. So let's see how the attackers can launch this attack. The first attacker can actually create one thread copying a source array to a destination array, right? Which Moonlight, we actually call this fast copy method to do the copying. And then attacker can launch another thread, run this assignment, assign an object with a new type to one of the elements in the destination array. And if the timing is right, if the type check, assignment, and the mem copy is aligned this way, right, aligned this way, and then essentially the attacker can actually bypass the type check and do the mem copy, right? You can see that triggering events in this order, attackers can bypass the type check, bypass the type system. And attackers can do a lot of bad things once they bypass the type system. At the very least, the attacker can create object with an identical field layout, except all the fields are made public, right? And later when you do this copying, you actually can access the private fields in the source element, right? Because you just do this naive copying. Okay, so that's one bug in the open source implementation of a piece of software. So let's look at an example actually in a commercial product, the Microsoft Internet Explorer. So this bug allows attackers to launch code injection attacks. Specifically, the attackers can create a malicious web page with a simple JavaScript. And then an innocent user opens up this page in Internet Explorer with multiple windows, right? And the JavaScript program in this page repeatedly calls this append child method provided by IE to append a child to the DOM tree. Unfortunately, this append child method actually has a race, right? So if you run it concurrently, and this append child race may actually corrupt a function pointer. So before triggering this race, the malicious page can call this create comments method to spray the heap with a lot of malicious code. And later, when this corrupted function pointer gets invoked, the pointer address may actually point to one of the pieces of malicious code injected, therefore allowing the attackers to launch code injection attacks. So this is actually pretty real. And there is this working exploit actually downloaded on my laptop. If you guys do not believe that concurrency attacks are real, let me know your address, and I'll send the page to you. Maybe you can open it up using your browser. OK, so let me show you another example. Which is a form of physical proximity attacks. These attacks are carried out in human time, where attacker can actually trigger a bunch of UI operations, right? The user interface operations, and there is a race in this UI logic. Therefore, attackers can do some bad things, right? So this bug actually is in the iOS operating system, the iPhone operating system, and that's like the date of this the CVE entry key of this bug. So let me show you how attackers can trigger this bug. So this bug actually allows attackers to bypass this passcode screen, right, to access your phone contents, such as your emails, your pictures, your address book, and also make phone calls, right, pretty serious bug. So let's see how attackers can trigger this attack. So when presented with this enter passcode screen, the attacker can actually press this emergency call button. And then in this, that dial pad screen, attacker can actually type in a corrupted phone number such as sharp, 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 and then press this call button, and immediately press this on-off button or sleep-wake button, right? And this sequence of events will allow the attacker to bypass this passcode screen, therefore get access to your phone contents. And for some weird reason, this bug actually keeps hunting eyeballs. So these words, bug, I think, existed in iOS 3 and then 4, and now like for iOS 5.0.1, the bug came back again, right? So it seems like there's some difficulties with fixing the bug. Okay, so we've seen a few real examples of concurrency attacks where attackers can trigger this sequence of events exploiting a concurrency vulnerability. And we know that they're real. Now let's look at the factors that can affect the exploitability of concurrency errors. So first of all, actually, you know, these bugs are pretty pervasive. So, you know, for the 46 bugs we collected, and they span across 23 vulnerable programs. And these programs span across all major operating systems such as Windows, Mac OS, iOS, and Linux. And they also span across different system layers, such as, you know, we find bugs in concurrency errors that can be exploited in Linux kernel, and also in libc, and in a lot of user space programs. This means our defense techniques cannot just target one specific system or layer or component. It has to be pervasive as well, the defense. And also, for those of you who are familiar with the file system time of check to time of use attacks, right? So we found out that concurrency attacks are more than just a file system time of use, time of check to time of use attacks. So if you look at this pie chart, right? So of the 46 bugs we found, 13 of them are file system talk to attacks, where the attackers can exploit limitations in the file system interface. So specifically, the file system interface provides methods for users to check permissions, right? It also provides methods for the processes to actually access the files, right? Read file, you know, print out the file, for example. And unfortunately, this interface doesn't make it easy to make the check and the use atomic, right? So you can imagine that a vulnerable program checks that a given user can access a particular file, and then this user is actually an attacker, it slips in, and then changes this file path to be a different file. And then this vulnerable program goes ahead and prints out the file contents, which turns out to be a secret file, like the attacker cannot access, right? That's how file system talk to attacks are exploited. And you know, for these attacks, there are, you know, only like 13 out of the 46, and the majority of errors actually concurrency attacks exploiting memory bugs. And there are these three physical proximity attacks where attackers exploit flaws in the GUI logic. And you know, that means the defense techniques for talk-to actually wouldn't work for the general case, you know, for these memory attacks, right, in particular. So we also found out that the vulnerable window size, right, the timing window in which concurrency errors are vulnerable actually heavily affects exploitability. So for the, So for the physical proximity attacks, these are carried out in human time. So the window is measured in terms of seconds, right? They're easy to exploit. And for the file system talk-to attacks, right? And the vulnerable window is measured in terms of disk access. Right? We know that disk access is slow, measured in terms of, you know, 5 milliseconds, 10 milliseconds, right? So these are also relatively easy to launch. And the memory resets are actually harder to exploit because the timing window is short, measured in, you know, tens of nanoseconds. And also, you know, think about the cache leases or CPU time slices, they're often longer than this vulnerable window. Nonetheless, we still find out two ways that attackers can exploit memory races. The first approach, attackers can actually programmatically retry their attacks. So think about this IE bug where two instances of the malicious page keep calling append child in a tight loop, right? Eventually, like, attacker can succeed in the trigger race in this append child. But this is the programmatic retry approach. And we think that, you know, to defend against such an attack, we may be able to use some anomaly detection techniques where we monitor the frequency of API method calls. If we see a spike, you know, drastic increase in the frequency of invocations to an API method, maybe that's an indication of attack. And the second method is attackers actually can enlarge the vulnerable window, right, by crafting some inputs. So think of this Moonlight bug where we have this array copy function, there's a check, there's a copy, right? And to actually enlarge the vulnerable window, right, the vulnerable window in which this code is vulnerable, attackers can just copy a really large array, right? If the array is really large, the type check, which is a loop iterating through all the elements, can take a long time. Therefore, the attacker can actually increase their chance of success. And to defend against these attacks, we're thinking maybe, you know, one possible idea is we can prioritize concurrency error detection based on window size, right? So if you see that there is a certain concurrency error and the timing window, the vulnerable window is actually can be controlled by the users, right? Such as this, in this array copying case, then, you know, that's a very serious error and we should take care of the error right now, right? Okay, so we talked about some factors about exploitability. So let's look at how concurrency attacks affect existing defense techniques, such as the defense techniques to, you know, SQL injection attacks, cross-site scripting attacks, you know, all these different attacks, right? So the methodology here is, so instead of going through all the papers and figure out whether or not concurrency affects the different techniques proposed in the papers. So we use a simpler methodology where we looked at the common mechanisms used by these different techniques and then see how concurrency affects these common mechanisms. So I'm going to give you an example of this methodology and also going to give you an example on how concurrency affects different techniques. So let's look at this simple piece of code where we store user input into a string and then form a SQL query based on the string. And then we actually execute this SQL query, right? So this code looks straightforward, except it actually has this SQL injection bug because the user input $s is actually not sanitized, right? And the a malicious guy can pass in this particular query and use x as the user ID and then a semicolon and then drop table users, right? And if you just execute this particular query statement, we'll first do a query and then we drop all the tables, right? So this is actually, there's a SQL injection bug here. Is it clear, guys? Okay. And you know, how do we defend against this attack? Well, you know, there are existing techniques such as we can do dynamic tag tracking. Whenever we get this user input, we just use the tag to keep track of if this string is trusted or not, right? Whether or not it comes from trusted source. Since $s comes from input, so the tag is red, which means it's dangerous. And later, when we form new strings of this original string, we just propagate the tag, right? So it's very simple taint tracking techniques. And before we execute this, run this execute SQL statement, we actually check this tag against this dangerous tag. If the tag of SQL is the same as this red tag, then that means we don't trust this SQL string, so let's just abort, right? So in this case, we'll just abort. Instead of running this dangerous SQL statement, it drops all the tables, right? It's so far so good. So let's look at another scenario where this $s actually comes from a trusted source, for example, a constant string with username Alice. And since this Alice is a constant string in my programs, I trust this particular constant string, therefore I assign this $s, the tag, a green tag to this $s, which means it's safe, right? I trust it. And later, we form a query and we propagate the tag, right? And later, when we execute this execute SQL $SQL statement, we'll do this tag checking. And since tag $SQL, it should be $SQL instead of $s, is green, instead of going to the board, we'll just execute the SQL, right? So this is so far so good. Everything checks out. So if you look at this difference, right, this SQL injection difference, it actually uses two common mechanisms used also by other techniques. The first, we call it metadata tracking, which means for each piece of program data, we actually keep track of some metadata, right? And in this case, we have the tags. And if you think about memory safety tools, we actually keep pointer, bounds, and bases, right, together with each pointer. And for information flow tracking tools, we also keep tags as well, right? And this is a common technique used by a lot of other defense techniques. And another technique used here is actually, we call it a software check, which means we actually emit code, or the programs write code to verify certain things before actually executing a dangerous operation, right? So this is called a software check. The check is done in software versus hardware check where you can mark a page as not executable, and if there is an attempt to execute something in the page, you get a page fault, right? That's hardware check. So let's see how concurrency affects metadata tracking. So if you look at this sequential code, it works perfectly. We keep track of the tag for this user input. However, in the concurrency setting, this technique no longer works, right? It becomes unsafe. So let's say in thread one, I do this, right? I just get this 10 tag, I keep propagating it, right? And then let's say in another thread, there's actually a read on this $s stream, where we first assign this green Alice to $s, and then we assign this tag to tag s, right? And in this case, if we run the top four statement in this particular interleaving, and after the top four statement finishes, we'll end up with a $s holding untrusted user input, and at the same time, tag s actually is green, right? So it's trusted. Later, if we execute this particular query, because tag s now is green, we actually run into this SQL injection attack, therefore cause all the table to be dropped, right? So here, by exploiting a risk condition on $s, attackers actually can bypass this metadata tracking technique and therefore launch SQL injection attacks. So we actually looked at a bunch of other common defense techniques as well, such as the metadata tracking and software checks I just showed you. And also we looked at anomaly detection. For anomaly detection, normally people either keep this sequential model and learn model of the sequential behavior of your program, which means in a concurrent setting, the model wouldn't work that well because you have concurrency. Or they try to learn a model of concurrent execution, which means the model can be really noisy, right? So this anomaly detection is also weakened by concurrency. And for hardware checks, such as page permission checks, right, they're as effective as before because the hardware can guarantee that the use and the check, they're atomic, right? Therefore, they won't be affected by concurrency. And we also looked at randomization techniques such as address space layout randomization, where when you load a program, you try to put the code and data into different portions, randomize the address placement of your code so that the attackers won't be able to easily launch buffer overrun attacks. And also instruction set randomization, right? So these techniques they're actually equally effective in the sequential setting and or in a concurrent setting because they don't assume this sequential context. However, previous research has also found out that randomization actually they only provide probabilistic guarantees, right? So you can easily attack these randomization techniques. So to conclude, concurrency attacks are indeed real. They're quite pervasive. A lot of programs actually suffer from these concurrency vulnerabilities that can be exploited. And also, concurrency attacks are more than just file system talk-to attacks. So I was showing you an example of a physical proximity attack where attackers can actually exploit errors in the GUI logic. And we've also seen attacks that can exploit memory races. And also, the vulnerability window size actually heavily influences exploitability. And there are ways for the attacker to programmatically retry things or enlarge vulnerable windows to increase their successful chance. And also, the common defense techniques actually are weakened by concurrency. So hope that this work will further stress the importance of the ongoing work on languages or runtime or better tools. And in addition, we hope that the community actually will think of the security implications of concurrency, right? Not just performance and correctness, there's this security implication as well. But that's all.